All right, sweet. So I guess just like a general start off, kind of like who, you know, what do you do here at Scissor and kind of how did you get started with what you do?
Sure. I'm Brenna Matlock. I'm the senior project manager here at the center. I've been here for about 7 years, I think. Math is not my strong suit. I'm the writer here. And I actually started out as a student. I was an editorial assistant for the Journal for Conventional Weapons Destruction, which is produced here at Scissor. I mentioned we have another team. That's our publications team, and so they focus specifically on producing a journal 3 times a year that I mentioned, and then To Walk the Earth in Safety, which is the annual report. What I do specifically for the center is now projects, project management. So I do most of our grant work, where it's grant reporting, grant writing, making sure that those grants are moving as they should, partnering with other spaces in the university. Mm-hmm. So most what I was hired for and what I've most historically done are training programs with Mine Action programs abroad. We called it the Senior Managers Course, and hopefully we can have a future version of it, but it's kind of been on pause with COVID and everything because it's an in-person program. We've hosted it several times here on campus, where we bring people from all over the world who are senior, who are in senior positions in Mine Action programs, whether they're nonprofit, government organizations, and they actually come here to learn business management skills from College of Business staff. Mm-hmm. So I kind of coordinate that. I've also taught sections of the course over time. So I started out doing presentation skills courses with the group, and I now teach, when it's available, gender and diversity considerations for the groups. And so we've hosted that, like I said, several times on campus. We've also taken it abroad for what we call our regional senior managers courses, where the problems that we want to address with the coordinators might be kind of regionally specific. So, for example, those mitigating the post-conflict risks in Southeast Europe, mm-hmm. we held a course specifically for them. So the countries involved were like Croatia, Bosnia, mm-hmm. Serbia. And so we actually hosted it in Croatia. We've hosted it in Vietnam and in Tajikistan twice. Mm-hmm. So that's what I've done most often, but we've kind of been looking at projects in the wider scope of post-conflict. So kind of at our core, we're always looking at like how weapons impact community, like mm-hmm. landmines specifically. That's how we started. And then moved on to other conventional weapons. Mm-hmm. And now we're looking at how do we help with post-conflict in other ways? So one of our most recent projects is with the American University of Kurdistan. Mm-hmm. They are a university in the Kurdish region of Iraq that wants to get American accreditation, and they're working towards that. So if a student graduates from AUK, that degree would be just as valuable as one at JMU here in the States. Mm-hmm. And so we're partnering with them. So that area has obviously been through a lot of conflict very recently. And so it's like, how do we support institutions, not just the Mine Action organizations that are kind of trying to rebuild and recover those communities. So I guess I'll stop there if that's kind of enough context for you.
Yeah, no, that's perfect. That's great. I kind of have a question about the senior management program, and specifically in terms of like what we were talking about before we started recording, how typically these are like ex-military, like male dominated spaces. Do you see in some of these like senior programs, like a lot of participation from women, or yeah, even at the upper like senior level, or at like the lower, like kind of lower organizational level? Mm-hmm.
It's a challenge. So when we hold the courses, they are predominantly men. And that's just because of the historical factors that I was mentioning before. And so what we started doing with the program in coordination with the U.S. Department of State. So most of our funding comes from the U.S. Department of State and various offices. One in particular is called the Office of Weapons Removal and Abatement. Mm-hmm. And they're the ones that specifically most recently have funded the training courses. And so we made it a requirement that they need to send women to these courses. And so that's also a requirement now in many of the grants the State Department requests, is that you need to have gender parity in your teams, women throughout all the levels of your organization. And so that has been, you know, one of the forces that will kind of change how they're recruiting people. So it's not just from those traditional avenues, but it's like, okay, we need to recruit women. How are we going to do that? What are our lessons learned for that? Are we going to provide training, for example, for women? So for the demining teams, they'll actually, you know, do postings saying specifically we want to hire women that we can train to these different explosive ordnance disposal levels. They're called like 1 through 3. And so we're trying to get women through, you know, start there, start in other avenues, and then hopefully in the future we'll have more women in our trainings, but it is predominantly men.
Gotcha. Yeah, it sounds like really similar. We like learned a lot about like quotas in countries mm-hmm. for, you know, matching, making sure like ballots are pretty evenly distributed. And this, you know, the state has to meet this, like, you know, I think Brazil is like 30% of, you know, the people on the ballot have to be women, and that's like out of like 1200 or something. You know, like so many people can run for office. So it's interesting to see like quota systems, or like, you know, like a quota system kind of like perpetrating down into like these other organizations.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to ask about your piece really fast. You mentioned that these women in these positions are kind of seen as like novel, or when they're reported on, it's more of like this novelty, more like a new kind of thing that's happening. But I know that's typically not the case. And so what do you think is kind of the way that like the media or that the public should go in its perception of women in these spaces?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good question, thinking about it. To give a little bit of background of why I kind of noticed the novelty, I'll call it the novelty trope that I noticed within the writing, I specifically wanted to see, like, if I read everything there's out there about women deminers, what would I learn? And I would learn that a lot of it's accurate and a lot of it's very well-meaning and supportive, like I had said in the article, but that a lot of it is like, wow, women do this, wow. Mm. And it's like, well, they've been doing it since 1999, so that's like the frustration there. It's like, how do we move that forward? And I think women deminers are in a really unique space because they are doing such hands-on physical work that can be seen the difference, like where there was once mines that aren't. And so that you can actually like see women's impact on this particular action. But when you look at post-conflict recovery overall, whether that's peace talks, whether that's the conflict itself, whether that's, you know, recognizing women afterward, there's a really interesting piece actually that's kind of like related to WRTC, where someone actually looked at statues that are made in like commemoration of like conflicts. So example, the example they used in the article was like the Troubles in Ireland. Mm-hmm. And so they were showing, you know, statues of when it came to like who was actually involved in like the conflict itself and who the heroes were in the situation or who was doing the peace talks, the statues were kind of showing like men, soldiers, like very like what you would kind of picture typically. Mm-hmm. And then like women were only included in these kind of like remembering of conflict in like metaphorical senses, mm-hmm. like maybe a woman carrying a baby and it was like, you know, these are the victims of what happened and not as like active participants. Mm-hmm. And really in the Troubles, women were just as involved as men in, throughout the entirety of the conflict and in post-conflict recovery and peace building.
Mm-hmm.
So I think of women deminers as an example, a very like physical, literal example of how women are contributing. And I think that they could be used as an example that can further show like how women are participating in other factors. Mm-hmm. Like this is just one small piece of how women participate. And I would like to bridge that gap of like, what are other activities that women are doing that we can learn from deminers,
mm-hmm.
or deminers can teach lessons there? Because what we do know is that often women deminers, when they're done with the projects, they go back to kind of the life they had before, and I think that's knowledge that we're losing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, how do we maybe shape, I don't really know the answer of like what do we focus on going forward, but I know there's just so much more we could talk about than what's really captured at the moment.
Yeah, it's interesting to see it's like fully empirical in like that sense, like, oh, like you said, like this is something we can like tangibly point to as like moving forward, when in fact there's like many other strides being taken.
Mm-hmm.
Like our textbook mentions that, you know, there are a ton of women, especially in like the political realm, who are doing a lot of work for post-conflict recovery, yet it's because it's not like as, it's a harder thing to show results for, you know, mm-hmm. they might not get the credit for it, unfortunately. Which is ironic because like in those spaces, you know, some countries in where like women political leaders are, you know, doing most of the work, they're seeing like better, you know, better results potentially, or less likely to see a conflict in the future.
Mm-hmm. And I would just say one factor that I try to keep in mind, and that I hope I think that our DMINI organizations are doing a good job of like putting names and faces and recognizing the women in their organizations. And when it comes to like, if we go all the way up to like the UN level, like not specifically, you know, calling them out, but like, let's say we get that high, mm-hmm. what women's voices do we hear? Mm. Usually white Western women's voices. Yeah. And so it's, how do we get all women to that level to share their experiences? Because my experience of mine actually was completely different from a DMINer in Tajikistan. And so mm-hmm. how do we, you know, recognize her voice, her perspective, which is incredibly valuable. So that's something else that I think is a factor that I didn't really quite get into in this particular article, but something else to think about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why I really want to watch the documentary, because I feel like, I mean, I haven't seen it. You could probably speak on this, but I'm sure it does a pretty good job at that. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
Very much so.
Let me see.
You have any more questions? Or
my
I can talk about this all day. Don't let me keep you here.
Yeah, no, you're good. You're good.
Let me see.
I don't have my formula written down.
Do you have any kind of?
I'm thinking.
Top of your head.
But I think we should probably. I think mine are more geared towards other things.
You can go for it. If you gotta.
Well, no, I was just curious, like. If someone were looking to get involved in the Harrisonburg area in terms of like helping out like SISR or like just community engagement, how would you recommend they go about it? And because that's part of our blog post is talking about telling people ways that they can either A, learn more about this topic, or and B, how do they get involved in it and what they can do to further expand their knowledge, I guess.
Yeah, I would say I think the most close to home activity that SISR does is work that we can provide to refugees who are mm-hmm. coming from post-conflict areas to the U.S. Mm-hmm. And so they are the most direct people that we can reach and work with in Harrisonburg. And so we only have one current program. Well, I guess we'll have two soon, but the one that's in place right now is our Peer Leaders Program, mm-hmm. where we are connected with the Harrisonburg Public Schools and Church World Service. Are you familiar with that organization?
Yeah.
And we have a group of students who are at the Harrisonburg High School, and they actually like meet as a group and become peers for one another. So there's some that have been in the group for a long time, some who have just arrived, and it's kind of like a place where someone really relates with what you've gone through. Like, mm-hmm. I came here and America is so weird. Like,
yeah.
You know, like, yeah. There's, like, high school doesn't make any sense. And mm-hmm. so, like, this is what I did. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, let's do an activity together. We try to do fun things. Like, so it's not just, like, this formal, like, let's sit here and talk about some topic. But actually, like, go do activities. Like, we'll go to take them to UREC where they can do things. Like, the tightrope course and things like that. Things I'm too scared to do myself, but they like to do it.
Yeah.
And so we always need help with that project. Particularly, the students don't have a way of getting to and from the program. So DPE is one of the student orgs, and they actually coordinate the drivers for us to make sure that happens. And it's like such a small thing, but it's it's like a foundation to how we can actually get the program to work. Mm-hmm. And so something else that we're doing is a database resource. I don't know how to explain it. We've got funding from 4VA, if you've ever heard of them. They're here at JMU. And we're going to be building a database, and students are going to be the ones building the database for us. Okay. So they're going to be working with faculty. So I think going forward, the more projects that SISR has, I've been trying to contemplate ways of, like, how can we get faculty involved, and therefore their students also, mm-hmm. to help us with grants directly. So if we have positions available, we'll post on JobLink for students. Mm-hmm. And I'm just hoping to have more and more of those opportunities. Of course, students can come, like you guys are now, to ask us questions for your projects. We host internships. But it is a bit of a challenge of, you know, most of this post-conflict work happens abroad.
Yeah.
And so it's like, how do we make those connections? Mm-hmm. What I'm hoping is with our American University Kurdistan students, mm-hmm. they absolutely loved coming here to JMU and learning from JMU students, and the JMU students were so welcoming, and so I'm hoping that we can like build those connections with institutions mm-hmm. abroad, mm-hmm. So maybe like further exchanges. So I think there'll be more opportunities for students going forward, but if you actually want to get involved with post-conflict here in Harrisonburg, I think refugees are the way to go, mm-hmm. other than maybe projects we'll have in the future.
Awesome.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Do you kind of have any, like, general advice for people who might want to get into it out like outside of Harrisonburg, like where they might look towards that,
mm-hmm.
like post-grad or something?
Yeah, I think if you're a JMU student, you have a leg up with other students with the Mind Action community. Everyone in Mind Action knows JMU's name because
mm-hmm.
of Scissor and the work that we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we try to involve students as much as possible. So I think that this is like a field that many people aren't introduced to, or maybe they're introduced to later in life. And so to have people coming in who already know a lot about the topic, they're like, oh, that's great. You
mm-hmm.
already kind of been introduced, so you're not starting from the ground floor.
Mm-hmm.
So Mind Action organizations are always hiring our alumni. I just actually, there was an event on Tuesday. It was called, there's a UXO caucus in Congress that you might be interested in kind of seeing how organizations are coming together to advocate for this issue on the Hill. But it was just a room full of JMU graduates, really. So we have like all these photos now of, you know, of them there. And so I think that if you're interested, there's, you know, through Scissor's website, if you just look through and see like there's MAG, MLI, HALO, you know, MAG came to JMU
mm-hmm.
For the event. So, you know, you could look, there's so many organizations beyond Scissor
mm-hmm.
and they're very interested in JMU candidates. So I don't know what I would tell a student in general, but JMU students, I'm like, you're in.
Yeah, if you want to get into this field, there's a lot of doors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so.
That's perfect. Well, I don't really have any other really pressing questions, and I don't want to take too much of your time today. And this was great. We got a lot of good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going to be great to include in our post.
Yeah. Is there any, like, how do I ask this? Like, never mind. I was going to say, like, is there, like, any, like, Yeah, I'm struggling to figure out how I want to say this.